is BCS Financial. Ms. Doyle.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Linda Doyle, and I represent Wendell Berg. Mr. Berg is appealing two errors made by the District Court in this case. One, the District Court allowing the Appeals Committee to interpret unambiguous terms of the plan document. And two, the District Court's error in finding that the Appeals Committee could rely on Mr. Ryan's version of the minutes of a February 28, 2003 meeting to reclassify Mr. Berg's termination from the company. Mr. Berg was hired in 1982 by BCS Financial Corp. He was the general counsel and a vice president. He signed an employment agreement. That agreement entitled him to certain benefits, including supplemental retirement benefits.
Doesn't your argument really depend on your being able to show that somehow he had a right that to some, you know, contemporaneous designation that he was being fired for cause, that they couldn't make a retroactive determination? Isn't that what you're arguing?
Our argument, Your Honor, is that the very wording of the plan document.
Isn't that your argument, right?
It is our argument. But our argument is the plan document says that.
I don't get it. I mean, suppose you let someone go for whatever reason, or maybe he resigns or something, and then later you find out he's embezzling. Well, couldn't you say, you know, we didn't realize that we had cause to fire him, but we do, and therefore we're not going to give him these benefits? What would be wrong with that?
It's wrong under this plan, Your Honor, because of its very precise terms.
But I don't see the terms of this plan being all that precise. I can imagine three plans. One plan says something like all determinations about the conditions of departure will be made at the moment of departure, so with cause, without cause, et cetera, et cetera. Another plan at the other end of the spectrum has what you refer to as a bad boy clause or whatever that says only if you have reserved the right. And the plans in the middle don't say anything one way or the other about it, aside from just general talk about the fact that people can leave under different circumstances. Now, it seems to me if you have one of those middle plans, at that point the standard of review becomes extremely important, and everybody agrees here that this is an arbitrary and capricious standard of review. The committee has the ability to fill in lacunae. The committee can elaborate on the plan and all of the rest. And so I think unless there's something contrary to this power in the plan, the committee is entitled to interpret it this way.
Well, our view, Your Honor, is that there is no need for interpretation because of the words discharged from employment. That implies an event.
But why is that? Of course it implies an event, but whether that event closes the time period for consideration or is, in a sense, the beginning of the process isn't really answered.
I think it is in the plan, Your Honor. Mr. Berg left employment. He severed employment at that term and collected benefits for 14 months.
Times, but every time I kept reading the same language that you were quoting, and I didn't find myself any more illuminated as to this somewhat distinct timing question, which I think is the crucial one.
I think under the well-settled law of ERISA, Your Honor, that the burden is on the plan to draft the plan to do what it wants it to do.
If that's, particularly if there's no authority reserved to interpret terms that may require interpretation, to fill in lacunae in the plan, absolutely. But if you have a plan that is one in which the operators of the plan, if you will, the committee, the appeals council, whatever they are, has reserved the right to do that, then you certainly can't allow them to decide by interpreting the black is white and white is black. But on the other hand, if they're filling in the blanks, why isn't that exactly the plan they wrote?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, in my view, they're not filling in the blanks. There's no question that they have the right to interpret undefined terms. They can, for example, interpret cause.
And why can't they interpret time? You know, do we have a minute to decide if this man was discharged for cause or not? Do we have to keep embezzlers on the payroll for an extra 6 months while we do all of our investigation just to make sure we have the right record when we let them go? Do we have a month? I mean, there is a question here that they're filling in.
If BCS really believed that they didn't have the right record, they could have done one of two things. They could have amended the plan. They could have put Mr. Berg on a leave of absence, stopped paying him, and done an investigation. Instead, they allowed him to resign without cause. That's what the board minutes say. They congratulated him. They exited him as a retirement, and they paid him.
When the appeals, the district judge doesn't resolve this question, but what the district judge does say on page 27 and 28 of her opinion was that when the committee was looking at the circumstances of his resignation and making the decision, they were entitled to determine that Mr. Ryan's version of the minutes was the more accurate of the two. So it's a somewhat different question from were the Ryan minutes ever adopted, or was it the Berg minutes that were adopted, or all the rest of that?
Well, I think there are a number of problems with the Ryan minutes. First, there's an inconsistency in the district court's order. The judge first said that the appeals committee was entitled to rely on the minutes, but also acknowledged that there's absolutely no evidence on the record that the board ever adopted those minutes.
Well, I don't see why that's inconsistent, though. I think she's saying over on page 12 of her opinion, where she says the administrative record doesn't indicate whether the board of directors adopted those minutes. She finds the statement that your opponents are relying on to be vague, but then she's saying, but nonetheless, there they are. Everybody agrees the Ryan minutes were created. You're not contesting that, are you? And you're also in agreement that they appeared before the board when it's making its decision about these benefits. Right, the board, the committee. I'm sorry,
the appeals committee.
The appeals committee
yes.
had the Ryan minutes in front of it,
yes.
So they're sitting there reading the Ryan minutes, and so she's saying, right or wrong, adopted or otherwise, this was a piece of information that the appeals committee had in front of it, and it was entitled to credit Mr. Ryan's account.
Well, then, Your Honor,
it's a separate point.
Yes, excuse me. Then, Your Honor, I think you have to look very closely at those minutes, and I don't think they get the district court or BCS. Anything in this case, those minutes say that a couple of important admissions, that the company didn't have cause at that point. Mr. Ryan said, I will conduct a further investigation, and then the board could avail itself of appropriate action. Doesn't say with any specificity that the board could reclassify this termination, that it could take back these benefits. And if you look on page 12 of the district court's order, look very clearly at the motion made and accepted based on Mr. Ryan's own version of the minutes, is to fulfill the corporation's obligations with respect to Mr. Berg's contract, period. Not temporarily, not until we find cause, but period. These minutes just don't get BCS or the appeals committee where it went in this case.
Would you make the same argument if even through utmost diligence, the company wouldn't have learned that he was an embezzler until months after he had been let go and given all these congratulations? Would you still be arguing that?
Yes, I would, Your Honor, under this plan.
I have to say, it makes no sense, right? No sense. Imagine someone like Berg coming to the company and say, look, in my retirement plan, I want it very clearly stated that if I should be fired for any reason, and later you learn that I'm a criminal, nevertheless, you know, if you didn't discover it when you fired me, I want all my benefits. You think a company would agree to a term like that?
Well, those aren't the facts of this case, Your Honor.
Well, of course not. I'm asking you what you think about this hypothetical case.
No,
right?
I don't think a company would agree to it.
Cases, right?
Yes, okay. Your Honor. No, so, I don't think a company would agree to a request made that way.
Right.
But this is an ERISA plan, and it's termed, this is a unilateral contract.
I don't understand that. It would be no different if he went to the plan, you know, and said, or the employees went, look, we want to have an ERISA plan, but we want to make sure that just because we turn out to be criminals, we still get all our pensions, right?
Well, the plan has a remedy. The plan could do what other plans do, write a clause to protect itself. It didn't do that in this case.
Well, we usually don't say that contract parties have to be omniscient and anticipate every kind of every contingency that might arise, right?
No, we don't, Your Honor, but it's very common for CERP plans like this.
Don't we usually try to interpret in such a way as to reflect what the parties would have done if they'd thought about this particular contingency? Isn't that the standard interpretive method?
Again, it's very common in plans like this to have a clause to protect the corporation. They didn't do it in this case. Mr. Berg has no protection because of the arbitrary and capricious standard of the review of his conduct. The plan had two options: write the plan more appropriately or put him on a leave of absence for the 14 months that it took them to investigate this. They didn't do it. They let him go, and they paid him for 14 months.
Well, how is he prejudiced by that? If they put him on a leave of absence without pay, how would that make him better off?
14 months later, he has no ability to defend his conduct, Your Honor. He's under this arbitrary and capricious standard of review. He's 14 months out. Now we're several years out. At least if he had been put on a leave of absence and been, you know, asked questions during an investigation.
How would that have affected his status? So he's on leave of absence. 14 months later, they say, you're an embezzler, you're fired. How would he be better off in that situation than with what happened?
I think he'd be closer in time to the action, Your Honor. He would have some notice. He went off. He retired. After his retirement was celebrated, collected his benefits. Well, he disagrees with the accusations, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Doyle. Mr. Simon?
May it please the Court, Gregory Simon on behalf of the BCS Supplemental Retirement Plan. There are several reasons why the Court should affirm Judge St. Eve's decision in this case. She had properly applied the arbitrary and capricious standard of review to the Appeals Committee's forfeiture determination. Her decision relied on the provisions of Section 3.2 of the SERP that provided this authority to interpret the plan. As the Seventh Circuit has instructed trial courts to do, Judge St. Eve started with the Appeals Committee's determination and studied the SERP language and evidentiary record.
Is BCS a large company?
Fewer than 100 employees.
So small.
I don't know if that's small or large. Judge St. Eve found that the Appeals Committee's application of forfeiture was reasonable, and her decision fairly addressed each of Berg's arguments. Specifically, Judge St. Eve determined that Berg's argument that the plan administrator lacked authority to forfeit Berg's SERP benefits raised both factual and legal arguments. Legal
Mr.
issues.
Simon, I wanted to ask you a question about this. I'm trying to decide how important it is that the plan, or that the company, I will say, at the time it lets Mr. Berg go, has made a decision that this is a contingent decision. I mean, does this mean that virtually everybody who's retired under plans like this one needs to worry about all of a sudden the company doing a revisit on all of its decisions and suddenly terminating all their retirement benefits because someone says, gee, that really should have been a for-cause termination? Forget about embezzlement. I mean, just for-cause. That's a very uncertain world that you think people live in.
I think these cases come up in a factual context, and it's very important to look at the facts of this case. And it was,
well, if you take the Ryan minutes in this case, I can see that maybe unbeknownst to Mr. Berg, which is maybe another problem, but the Ryan minutes suggest that there was some squeamishness about this from the very start. They weren't quite sure what was out there, but they were uncomfortable. Now, the next question is, should they have said to Mr. Berg, look, we're going to let you retire with all these nice things right now, but this is just to alert you that we don't consider the books closed on this.
I think focusing on the minutes and the corporate authority, I think, is helpful. That is this case. Most people leave a company and they don't take the issue to the board of directors.
But your theory, though, of the case, as I understood it, was a company like BCS could come back 18 months later, or for all I know, 5 years later, and suddenly decide that some high executive was in fact terminated for cause and wipe off a big financial liability from the books.
That's never our position, Your Honor. Let me put that to rest. Our position is this case.
So
the appeals committee.
How do you not get there according to the legal theory that you're arguing?
Judge St. Eve looked at the facts and said, here's the situation, just as you say, a bell was rung.
No, that's not the question. So if you're fired for cause, now that wouldn't forfeit your vested benefits, would it? Under ERISA vested benefits, or would it?
You're talking about a supplemental retirement plan or a qualified retirement? I'm not sure when you say vested.
Well, I guess the qualified is the one where you have vested benefits, right?
There's no forfeiture provision in the qualified plan. This is a supplemental plan with
a
forfeiture.
This is a supplemental plan. But now, in answer to Judge Wood's question, is it your position that those supplemental benefits can be canceled on the basis of any determination that isn't arbitrary or capricious that the person should have been discharged for cause, even if the cause were something like he wasn't a very good worker, not that he was a crook?
Not at all. It's not the BCS's
well,
position.
How is cause defined then?
It's cause is expressly in Section 2.9 of the SERP defined in terms of the sole discretion of the administrator that this is something significant.
So that doesn't
That's
help.
Why I'm asking the
so
question.
They can say, well, you were actually a good worker, but you weren't great. And our company aspires to greatness. So therefore, we've decided that you should have been gotten rid of for cause, and therefore you lose all your benefits. Is that possible under the plan?
Absolutely not.
And what bars it? What prevents it?
What prevents it is a diligent administrator that
that's not diligent administrator. What does that mean?
That is not going to abuse the discretion.
There's no contractual protection that these people have.
It sounds to me like there's no contractual protection, and also your position seems to be that the cause itself could be after acquired, if you will. Now, I realize in Mr. Berg's case, the factual record suggests that those things which led to cause were in place as of the day he ended his employment. But if you found out 5 years later, you know, that everybody who worked with him grumbled or something, you know, that he was someone you might have fired for cause. In the discrimination law context, there are rules under a case called Nashville Banner about after acquired evidence being used, in a sense, retroactively to
That issue was addressed by Judge St. Eve. It was briefed extensively. We argued that, and they did not take an appeal on that. It's not before the court.
But I guess my continuing concern is with these supplemental plans, I don't see anything in either the law, as you're arguing, or the plan that protects somebody from having his or her supplemental benefits just terminated at some point by an administrator who now has decided that, after all, it really should have been for cause that you left.
With respect, if I may, the bell was rung. Mr. Berg himself was trying to get additional benefits. He was trying to get things locked in. Took it to the board of directors a month before he left. He wanted to be pre-qualified. He wanted it to be predetermined that he would lock in these benefits. The board said, no, we're not going to go down that path. A board of directors has a right to act. It has a requirement to act and be informed. They wanted to be informed before they took a decision on this. There was a bell rung. There was going to be an investigation. As soon as the investigation happened, they notified Mr. Berg. This is not a case where something
so
was left.
Your basic position is it would be, if they were to unduly delay, if the board were to unduly delay, the decision would be arbitrary.
That would be a fair kind of requirement, that there should be some time limit on this and an undue delay. But writing the letters to Mr. Berg, what they did in this case, what the record shows is that they were careful with him. They asked him in writing, in letters, were these mistakes or not? Did you do this intentionally or not? And then they waited until the initial benefit appeal process had run its course, and they gave Mr. Berg extensions of time. The plan tried to work with Mr. Berg, and it wasn't until the company and the plan didn't want to prejudge that prior proceeding. That was 5 months of this 12-month period that they're complaining about. This is very serious, taking of funds and increasing in benefits without authority from the company. This is not a case of cause, you weren't a great employee. This fits squarely within anybody's definition of embezzlement and the type of circumstances that would warrant forfeiture. and it was done within a reasonable amount of time. There's no requirement that it be done on the day of termination. And as the panel's questions, I think, reflected, that would be very troubling because it would reward an employee who hid his misconduct into the last day. And Mr. Berg was uniquely well-positioned as a general counsel. That's very troubling in this case, that you have a lawyer who's hiding and advising and campaigning for himself, and then on the last day he says, it's done, I'm entitled to those benefits forevermore. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Simon. Mr. Doyle, your time had expired, but you can have a minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to make a few points in closing. To address Judge Wood's question, there's no evidence that this was a contingent decision. The Ryan minutes do not say that. And I'd also like to point out that Mr. Berg's conduct is not at issue in this appeal. Because of the arbitrary and capricious standard, we can't contest it. But clearly we do. The record is clear. Mr. Berg denies that he embezzled, denied that he engaged in any conduct that was for cause, and we take issue with counsel's characterization of his conduct. It's not before you. Companies have ample protection against wrongdoers in these cases. Draft your plan better. Put the executive on a leave of absence. Do not sever the relationship like they did in this case. And do your investigation more quickly. Executives, on the other hand, have zero protection in cases like this, especially with an arbitrary and capricious standard. You're right, Judge Posner. 5, 10 years later, a new company and a change of control, new owners could come in and say, well, we think it was cause. And under the arbitrary and capricious standard, you have no defense. And frankly, a prudent plan administration is cold comfort in this case and other cases. You have protections as a company. These executives that sign these unilateral contracts and serve and perform, in other words, live up to their benefit, their bargain, have no protection in these cases. This document is quite clear. He was discharged from employment and dismissed without cause. That's undisputed because he got benefits for 14 months, and they have no right to reinterpret that history.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Doyle and Mr. Simon.